Welcome, friends. Welcome to a very exciting program today, which is something that many of you like more than the Gita, unfortunately. But it's our way of getting you to listen, because today you're going to be hearing about something that I promise you will find very interesting. Lou, how are you?
I'm very good. No, we don't like this more than the Gita. It's just like when you're in school and you get a chance to get out of the classroom and go on a field trip. Everybody loves that, right? A little change.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's good. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about first the calendar. So let's, today being September, how would you feel, my friends, if suddenly you were told that you were going to lose 11 days in this month? So that's what happened in Great Britain in 1752. And you can look all this up, by the way, on Google or anywhere you want. In 1752, the month of September, the date went from September 2nd to directly to September 14th. So 11 days went missing on the month of September in 1752. There were riots. And those of you who are on Facebook can probably see, thanks Lou, this calendar went directly from the 2nd to the 14th and 11 days were missing. There were riots in Great Britain. And the reason for this is that they were switching from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. The Gregorian calendar is the calendar that we use today. And you may say, what does this have to do with the Gita and Vedic times and so on? And the reason I'm saying this is because our calendar of today is based and originated in the Hindu Panchang, which is the calendar still in use today in India. In the Hindu circles. So to explain all of this, it gets very complicated because the calendar is based on the lunar revolutions and the solar cycle.
Right. Yep.
So it gets complicated because there's 365 days in the year, and you cannot really divide 365 exactly by 12. So the days of the month are messed up and so on.
Right.
So the Indians had a very good system at the time of the Gita and before that even, where they measured it and you never lost a day. When different calendars came about at that after that, and I won't go into all those details, but Julius Caesar in 44 BCE and his son Augustus Caesar in 8 BCE came up with the Julian calendar. And the reason it was called the Julian calendar was because it was after Julius Caesar, which is right. The reason why we have the month of July named after Julius. And the month of August was named after Augustus Caesar. Before that, it was called Quintili and Sextili. And interestingly, the Romans, who took it over, by the way, from the Indians, in the months of the winter, since there were nothing being done in the winter, they had no months, Lou.
Really? The calendar just stopped?
The calendar just stopped. It started in March. And the reason it started in March, and with the reason it was called March, was because the ground started to thaw, you could start to march, and the military would start to come out and do their exercises. So they needed to say in March is when this happens. Why March?
Were they counting days in the winter and March? March date was picked a day in March and said this is March and let's go.
Yeah. So the Roman god of war was called Mars. So March was called March. April was the month of flowers in spring, so it was called Aperire. May was from the Greek goddess Maia, and June was the Roman goddess Juno. July was at that time Quintili and Sextili, which sex meaning six.
Right.
And September was the seventh month.
Right.
So you may say, how is September the seventh month? Right. No January, February. So March was the first month. But it actually goes back, and this is the interesting part. It goes back to the Hindu calendar, which started on March 21st and still does. So December 21st, everybody knows, is the winter solstice, right?
Yes.
It's the longest night and the shortest day. We all know also that June is the longest day and the shortest night.
Yes.
What many people don't know is March 21st is the spring solstice. That's when spring is supposed to start. That's when life is supposed to begin after winter. So the Indians, the Hindus, decided to start the calendar on March 21st, and that was the first month. The second was April, the third was May, fourth was June, fifth was July, sixth was August, seventh month was September. Hmm. And that's why in Sanskrit, the word for seven is Sapta. So Ambar is a zodiac. So Sapta Ambar means seventh month of Amber, of right. Zodiac. Akta is eight. Akta Ambar was October. Nava is nine. That's why we have Navaratri. So Nava Ambar yep. was November. And Dasha, we know the word Dasha for many things in Sanskrit. Dasharatha is 10. There's many ways of saying Dasha in Daha in 10. Dasha Ambar is December. So these words all came from the words and the calendar came from the Hindu calendar.
Right.
What happened was the Gregorian calendar, Pope Gregory, was unhappy with this nomenclature because every so many years, because they had extra days, Easter would get pushed back. And So the dates weren't the same. So Pope Gregory the 13th devised the Gregorian calendar in 1582, but the British didn't go along with it until 1752. They said, no, we're going to stick to the Julian calendar. And in 1752, when they decided to switch, they were already so different that 11 days had to be scrapped. It's a fascinating subject. It'll take me hours and hours and hours to go through all of that. So I ask you all, if you're interested, to look this up and study all these different calendars. So that's the calendar. What is also important at the time is that the meridian to determine time went through a certain part of India and the day started at 5 a.m. So the day started at 5 a.m., which was midnight in Greenwich, right?
Okay. Yep.
Because India was 5 a.m. So when the British came and they decided to change, they said they did not want the meridian to be in India. They wanted it to be in meridian. So they actually went to Parliament and they chose to change the meridian to Greenwich.
Wow.
And yep. Parliament agreed and then they changed it. But they had to choose Greenwich because they needed a time that went through so that it would became at midnight.
Right.
So now all days switch and yet 1 minute past midnight, you say, okay, the next day has begun. Many people questioned it at the time to say, how does a day begin at midnight? 5 a.m. or sunrise seems more likely, but if you move it from India to England, that's what we are going to suffer. So that was the Greenwich meridian in meantime.
Mm.
Now let's go to Pythagoras. If you go back 700 BCE, you find that all over Europe, you'll see wall frescoes and terracotta portraits of Ramayana, which is the story of Ram, Lakshman, Sita, on the carvings. So we know that there was great interaction between India and Europe going back thousands of years BCE, but definitely 700 BCE because there were frescoes and portraits. The Etruscans learned a lot about Sanskrit and Indian culture. They passed it on to the Greek and Roman civilizations. Therefore, you found that a lot of languages, such as German, French, Scandinavian, Slavic languages, are rich in Sanskrit words. And we can go over that sometime if you want.
Right.
But in 600 BCE, Pythagoras of Greece went to the main universities in India. Just like now, people go to Harvard or Cambridge in England for further studies, saying that's the best university you go to. The two universities that were in India at the time, very well known, were Nalanda and Takshashila. And people strove to get into one of these two universities. And when we talked about Jesus Christ, we said that Jesus was known to have gone to one of these two universities at that time for further studies. But 600 years before Jesus went there, 600 years BCE, Pythagoras went there. When he went, being Greek, he, you know, used to eat meat and so on. And in India, they stopped him from eating meat. They said, you know, you don't do that. There's transmigration of the soul. We're all one. Atman, Brahman is the same in this cow as there is in us, and so on. So he learned a lot. He learned there. He was there for 6 years, came back from there, and brought with him three things. One was the knowledge of mathematics, which he was very, very interested in. Ancient Indian medical treatments that he brought back with him, and the fact that there's reincarnation and transmigration of the soul. Those three are known as the Pythagorean school of thought. So we have all heard in school and college when we're learning Pythagoras' theorem, and everybody gives credit to the Greek civilization for this. But what we should know is that Pythagoras learned this from India when he came back from the Takshashila school. So even in the Greek and Roman legends, they come from the Hindu Puranas, from the Ramayana and Mahabharata. And some of these mythological stories, like Achilles had a weak heel, Duryodhan had a weak spot in his thigh. So, and Panchatantra, which is all the tales, are copied into Aesop's tales. So, yeah. So another interesting story we can talk about next time is something called the Dies Natalis Solis Invicti. This was the birthday of the sun. You remember we talked about Egypt being the Suryavanshis, the country of the sun, the followers of the sun.
Yes.
So at that time, they made it necessary by law that everybody pray to the sun. And December 25th was supposed to be the day of the birth of the sun. And so it was thought to be that. Now, everybody knew at that time that Christ, 400 years after Christ, Jesus Christ, was not the time of his birthday, December, because everybody knew he was born in spring.
Right.
So why did they celebrate his birthday in December? Because they didn't know his exact date of birth, whether it was the 25th, but it was a celebrated birthday anyway, which was the birthday of the sun, which was a Hindu holiday. And then they decided that they might as well make Christmas at that time because it would have another added feature, which is lighting up lights all over and making the darkness go away. That's a whole other story, which we can get into some other time. But what I want to use the remainder of the time is to tell you a very fascinating story, my friends, about Korea. Are you ready for this, Lou?
I am ready. I'm looking forward to this.
So some years ago, I would say maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was reading a story in the newspaper, and I read that from South Korea, 100 delegates from the government landed in India and wanted to go to Ayodhya. Now, today, Ayodhya is the birthplace of Ram. You've seen it in the news almost on a daily basis for the last few years because there is a temple there, Ram's temple, that was converted by Muslims to a mosque and now to be converted back to the Hindu temple. But that was known as the birthplace of Ram, called Ayodhya. So these 100 delegates wanted to go to Ayodhya, gave $40 million, which was a huge sum in India, to Ayodhya, and called it the sister city of a city in Korea called Kimhae. K-I-M-H-A-E. So they made it a sister city and gave it $40 million. Then they looked for a farmer by the name of Mishra. And the poor farmer, I mean, if he made a dollar a day as income, he was thrilled, I'm sure. They gave him millions of dollars. And they said, they all bowed down to him, all 100 of them. And they said, you are the direct descendant of our king. And he was shocked. He had no idea what was going on. This story was so fascinating to me, Lou. Mm-hmm. So he had no idea. They then made him an ambassador between Ayodhya and Kimhae in Korea. And they paid him millions of dollars to travel back and forth between India and Korea.
Wow.
So, of course, one would be surprised to say, what's going on here? Here's the story. So in 50 AD, 50 years after Christ, there was a king in Ayodhya whose name was King Mishra. Very powerful king, very rich, had armies, navies around him. He was like a descendant of Lord Vishnu and was very powerful. He had one daughter and one son, older daughter, direct descendant of his, and then her younger brother. So if he died, the next heir to the throne was this princess. Her right. name was Gauri, G-A-U-R-I. Gauri comes from the word in Sanskrit, for cow, meaning gau. Gau is cow. That's where the word cow comes from.
Right.
Gau is the reason given because cow is considered holy, sacred, because it's very peaceful, very calm, it's very giving of its milk, of its skin after it dies, of its flesh after it dies, all kinds of things. And the bull just keeps working all the time in the fields. So right. cow is supposed to be a very holy thing. So her name was Gauri. He woke up one day, his daughter was 16, and he came out to his ministers and he said, I just had a dream. And in the dream, God said to me that your daughter has to go to this island so many miles away, and she has to marry the prince of that island, which is now Korea, by the way.
Yeah.
So his minister said, all of them said, our king is losing it. He's going crazy.
Yeah.
This is his only daughter, the heir to the throne, and he's going to put her on a ship and send her off to some island we don't even know. It's a remote jungle island, not civilized like us. And he's going to get her married to some person from the jungle.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But he said, listen, the God told me this, and I will do this. Now, at the same time, surprisingly, because they had no telephones, no telegrams, no letters, nothing going back and forth from that island to India at that time. India was a very civilized country. Korea had just begun its civilization.
Right.
Surprisingly, at that time in Korea was a young man. He was also at that time maybe 18 or so, which was old both in India and in Korea for somebody not to be married.
Right.
He had refused to be married. They were telling him from the age of 12, you should get married, you should get married. And he said, no, I had a dream. And God came in my dream and told me that there was going to come a ship over the oceans and my bride would be in there. So wow. I'm going to wait until that happens. Now, you may think I'm making this up, but you can look it up. I'll give you the ways of looking this up on the internet. And there have been, in Korea, this is well known, and they've made lots of movies on this and books written about it because it's a love story of kind.
Sure, yeah.
So King Mishra said to his followers, you know, get Gauri, get me seven fleets, not seven ships, seven fleets.
Wow, yeah.
Put my younger son on one, send the best archers, military men, and scholars so that they can continue to teach everybody there in this place. We'll just take it over. Whatever the island is, we'll just take it over. And it'll right. be one of our satellites. And we will teach people there. We'll teach them martial arts. We'll teach them how to fight. We'll teach them military warfare. We'll teach them mathematics, whatever. So when they put the ship, the fleets to sail, Princess Gauri took with her three things. One was the royal seal. Everything on that ship, the clothes, everything had the seal of Ayodhya.
Right.
And the seal of Ayodhya is the seal that is of Korea today. Two fish in a 66 position, upside down, 69 maybe. Yep. Two fish kissing. You've seen the seal of Korea?
Yes.
And she took, the second thing she took was tea. She said, I like tea. I don't know if they have tea there. I want lots of plants of tea so that I can plant tea there and have tea. Right. That's where Korea got. And they did this DNA testing, by the way, and they showed that the tea is the same. There's studies on this. You'll see it on the internet. Tea plants. And she took, in order, they said the sea might be rough, so they put a lot of stones from Ayodhya in the ships to keep it settled down in the ground as ballast. Mm-hmm. So those stones were also, they were deciphered, and they found that they were from Ayodhya. Princess Gauri got to the island, this king, young 18-year-old king, his name was King Suro. King Suro, people came running to him, said, there's a big armada coming across the horizon, so many ships. And he said, oh, that's probably the person I had in my dream, that they said, God said, that's my bride.
Yeah.
So he said, eagerly, he said, as soon as they land, bring her over to me. And so they went to the procession as they landed, and they said, come, our king wants to see you. They came back to the king and left the princess and everybody else on the beach. And they said, she refuses to come. And he says, why? He says, she says, first, I'm a woman. Secondly, I'm a princess. I am owed a proper reception. You don't come here and tell me to come to your palace.
Right. Yeah.
And so he said, whoa. You know, he then created a big tent village or whatever outside his palace and said, please bring them here. And with all pomp and show, they were brought there and they stayed. He took good care of them. They met and, you know, they got married. After that, her title in Korea, I guess they couldn't say Gauri, so they called her Queen He, H-U-H. Mm-hmm. Her name was also H-E-O, Queen He or Queen Heo.
Yep.
And they had 10 sons and 2 daughters. Those kin sons and daughters now have become millions of Koreans.
Sure.
And their last name is either He or Kim, or Kim Hae Kims. They're called Kim Hae Kims or Kim Hae Hers.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So it basically goes to show you. I mean, then they did, these delegates from Korea did genetic testing of the people from Ayodhya and from themselves in Korea, and they found that it was the same. So it's a fascinating story.
It is.
Very, very interesting.
Especially they both had the same vision, both had the same dream that they were going to find each other.
Yeah. You know, another interesting story. When I was in New Jersey living there, I actually wrote to different professors on different universities to find out more about this story. And they said, there is a person here. He has just gone to visit his daughter in New Jersey, in USA. I said, oh, good. I can maybe meet up with him. I said, where can I find him? And they said, he's living in his daughter in New Jersey. Long story short, turns out that he was living actually just one town away from me in New Jersey.
Wow.
And he is the foremost authority in Korea, in the world actually, on this whole story of King Suro and their background. And he's very interested in it because his last name is Kim. And he said, we're all descendants. So it's a fascinating story. Shows you how small our world is, how we're all so connected.
Yes, and he was placed right there for you so you could tap into his knowledge.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was fascinating. Very interesting.
Yeah. Love that story.
Thank you, Lou. You always make me feel so good. So, friends, this is a field trip, and we'll do more of these as time goes on. We'll do Yukita, and we'll do field trips. If you have any comments, questions, anything that you want to ask me about the Gita or these field trips, feel free to write to us, right? Lou, you want to tell them where they can write and what they can do?
Yes. If you're listening to us on podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts, or Spotify, or several other outlets, you want to go to the Facebook page, The Gita Memoirs of a Psychiatrist, and that's where you can contact us. Either on, you'll see a video version of this episode, and you can write a note on there, or you can send a direct message and tell us what you think. If you have additional information, you have additional questions, by all means. It's always fun to hear from people, right?
Yes, absolutely. I love it when people write and ask questions and add to my knowledge, because many times people can give me things that I didn't know. So yeah, thank you.
A lot of history to cover here. So yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That was fascinating. I always love the field trip. But we'll be back starting chapter 8 in the next episode, right?
Yes. Next time we'll be doing chapter 8. And again, that's very, very interesting. Thank you, friends. We'll see you next time.